Romans and chapter 12. Those of you who have been coming will realize that we have made our way back to the book of Romans after a bit of a break. And in going back to this book, we are in chapter 12 of the book of Romans, which commences the injunctions or the imperatives after 11 solid chapters of instruction and instruction and instruction concerning the nature of the Christian faith. We have seen that God's demand upon us can best be summarized as us being a living sacrifice to him. A living sacrifice. Not a dead one, but one which is indeed alive. And as you open that up, invariably, you begin to realize that God is demanding of each one of us complete consecration. That's what he wants. Not getting onto a negotiating table and agreeing to disagree concerning some areas. He's basically saying, just the way in which an animal had its neck cut off, blood poured into a bowl, the animal cut up and taken and placed upon the altar, that's exactly the way we are to be consecrated to him. Except those were dead, we are alive. We've also seen the first area of application, which is in the context of the church, and that we ought to humble ourselves and recognize what gifts God has given to us and immediately begin to use them in order to be a blessing to other believers, and then together in order to extend God's kingdom in the world. Now, last week, when we recommenced this chapter, we began to look at verse 9 downwards. Verse 9 downwards. And basically, what I mentioned is the fact that this is the most concentrated section of Scripture with respect to injunctions or with respect to imperatives. You have approximately 22 of them, in which we are being told what to do. Do this and do this and do this within a very few verses from verse 9 to the end of the chapter. And we began to look at the first one, which is in verse 9, where we read, "Let love be genuine, abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good." I mentioned the fact that in a sense, that statement, "let love be genuine," is the overarching statement for the rest of these injunctions. In other words, they ought to flow out of this love that God has put within us. And the love is in itself a source of energy. And it's important for us to think in terms of energy. And all that the Apostle Paul is saying as he begins there is not quite an injunction. It's a statement of fact, and it is the statement that love is genuine, or true love is genuine. You can't have it another way. The moment it is with self-interest, it is serving me, it is no longer love. At the moment I am calculating about what my fringe benefits are going to be when I act for that person's good, it's no longer love towards the person. It is love towards myself. It ought to be disinterested. It's that other person's need that moves me, that energizes me to go into action. That is love. Today, we deal with the moral nature of this energy. the moral nature of this energy. And it's found in the last two phrases in verse 9. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Or as some versions put it, hate what is evil, and instead hold fast to what is good. Again, it's talking about this energy that ought to inspire us as believers into action. And it's going to be at a moral plane, so that which is wrong will cause us to act. That which is good will cause us to act. Both situations will cause us to act. And in a sense, it is the same energy that is moving us one way or the other. It's, if I could use the example of a magnet, you will find that with respect to if it is a South Pole and it meets a South Pole, you find that you can't get the two pieces together. There's just a repulsion that's happening, a repelling that is taking place between the two. Or turn it around and then move it towards a North Pole. You can hardly keep it back. It immediately connects. It's the same piece, but it is acting differently because the two are different poles altogether. That's exactly what Paul is saying here. That this spiritual energy that I am speaking about, in terms of its nature, it is one that is moral. And consequently, in the face of something that is morally wrong, it must be repulsed. In the face of something that is morally, aesthetically correct or good, it ought to be attracted. Love must be genuine. Now, in view of the subject that we're dealing with, I thought for this evening we should only handle the first part, and that is that we are being exhorted to abhor what is evil. And then when we have our next session, we will deal with the positive, and that is holding fast or clinging on to that which is good. So what is the Apostle Paul saying to us as he says that we ought to abhor what is evil? I think the most obvious is that as Christians, we must be, listen to this, disgusted to the point of being repulsed by evil around us. Let me say that again. As Christians, we must be disgusted to the point of being repulsed by evil round about us. The word that the Apostle Paul uses that is translated abhor, or as some of your versions would say, hate, this is the only place in the whole Bible that he uses it. It's used in normal Greek language, but this is the one place that he uses it, and you don't find it anywhere else in the whole of your New Testament. Although in 1 Peter or 2 Peter, you have it as an adjective rather than a verb, something that you ought to do. I'll give you the normal word that is used, and I normally don't give you Greek words here, but you'll appreciate why I'm doing so. The normal word that is used for hatred is the word miseo. And you find it many times in the Bible. But the one that he is using here is stugeo. And in fact, it's not just stugeo. He has another phrase added at the beginning, which is the phrase apo. Not the apple we eat, but A-P-P-O. And that phrase simply adds emphasis to it. It adds emphasis to it. So it means away from. So, first of all, you are hating, but there is an away from result of it. And so it's a little more than just, I don't like it. It is, I don't like it with disgust. You come quickly look the other way. It's what happens if you find something that is rotten, and as you open, the stench immediately comes out. Anybody can tell from your reaction that whatever it is that is in there, you are repulsed by it. Because you don't just don't like it, but you don't like it, and there is disgust, there is repulsion that takes place in your entire being. And that's what Paul is saying here. He has gone out of his way to use a word that he doesn't use anywhere else. Clearly, he must have been deliberately wanting to make a point that your reaction towards that which is evil ought to be this way. The best way, therefore, to capture it is that you must be repelled with sickening disgust at the sight of wickedness. You must be repelled with sickening disgust. Now, let's put it negatively. What Paul is saying is this, that it is not enough for us as Christians to abstain from evil. It's not enough. It's not enough to say, yeah, but I don't do it. I don't participate in what is wrong. Ah, but my classmates do, yeah, they're always doing these things. But me, I don't participate. Paul is saying, no, there must be a hatred. There must be positive energy that moves you into action, and not simply that I am a non-participant in that which is wrong. Now, as I hope to emphasize in a few moments, Christianity is about becoming like God. That's what it is. It's about becoming like God. What is God's attitude towards sin, towards idolatry, for instance? What did he do with Israel when their hearts were going after idols? Did he just say, well, you know, these guys, you can't help them? No. He was disgusted about it. And we've been reading in Ezekiel over and over again, chapter after chapter, where clearly God is saying, I'm going to punish you. I'm going to punish you. And initially he brought in the nation of Assyria, which took away 10 of the tribes into punishment, into exile. The other two continued to misbehave. He said, you guys are not learning from your friends. I'm going to do the same thing. And friends, it wasn't just somebody coming and nicely packaging them together. Guys, you know, pack your bags to Leaku, wherever Babylon is. Let's go. No. By the time these guys were done, bodies were scattered across Israel. Bodies. Dead bodies. Why? Because he was disgusted by what was taking place. Disgusted. Disgusted. And what we're learning here is that if we have a genuine conversion experience, we must not be different. There must be a repulsion we sense towards that which is evil. But let's go on and talk about the object itself. Because the hatred or the abhorrence being spoken about should be towards something that is of a certain value. And the value here is being referred to as being evil. Abhor what is evil. Thankfully, this time, the word that Paul uses for evil is one that he uses in many other places. And apart from the word itself, evil, sometimes it's translated as simply wickedness. Abhor what is wicked. Or another way to phrase it is to abhor what is morally corrupt. What is morally corrupt? In other words, it is not good. God would not consider it as such. It is the opposite. It is evil. It is wicked. It is morally corrupt. And notice the way I have said it. It is God considers it that way. In other words, the issue is not so much what you like or what you dislike. So if I don't like something, then to hell with it. If I like it, then I don't care what other people think. Me, it is okay with me. The standard, again, is God himself. He is the standard. So our mind should always ask the question, what does God say about this? What does he say? And that question is always answered from the Good Old Book. What does the Bible say about this? Well, one way in which it says it is by direct precepts, like the Ten Commandments. He said it in black and white, you shall not, you shall not, you shall not. Or another way in which the Bible puts it across to us is through examples of different individuals. And so we are able to see, because most of our Bible is narrative, we are able to say, surely this is what God says. Look at how he handled those who went this way. Clearly, the reason why his wrath broke out must be because he hates this. It is evil, it is wicked, it is morally corrupt. And sometimes it's simply by basic principles that we see in the Bible. And consequently, we are able to see genuinely that although what we are dealing with was not there in the Bible, it must still be something that is evil in his sight. So, for instance, the internet is not in the Bible. So nobody can say, well, God says, don't spend too much time on the internet. Up to the time that the last apostle died, that wasn't there. But again, you work backwards from basic principle. And consequently, there ought to be some reaction in you where there is something that is wrong. Why is that? Well, I've already touched on it. It is the fact that if you're a Christian, you are regenerate. God has given you his nature, and his nature is a moral nature. It is. It's part of the new birth. And consequently, when he saves you, you find within yourself a hatred for sin that was not there before. Because God's nature is ethically good. It's his very nature. And he shares it with us. That's the reason why the church can be a holy church. It is invariable because God has bequeathed that nature with his people. He's passed it on in the new birth. And where you find sin being entertained among the people of God, just know that the work of salvation has not taken place. If it has, this will happen because we have taken on the nature of God. But secondly, it's also because evil never profits anybody. Remember, the phrase here was, let love be genuine. Let love be genuine. Evil or sin or wickedness invariably destroys people. It does. It puts them on the wrong side of God. And apart from that, it is a downward spiral. People go from bad to worse. Sin kills. Sin destroys. Sin corrupts. Sin. I can continue. And therefore, if you genuinely have love for individuals and you discover that sin is being entertained in their lives, you will get into action because you know that this is destroying them. It is putting them in the path of the wrath of God. And consequently, the energy that rises up within you is an energy of hatred for this thing that is destroying them. It's an energy of abhorrence and repulsion for this thing because it is destructive. It is. Now, it's very easy for us to think of evil as something that we hate because it is being done to people whom we love. So, for instance, if your brother or sister in the Lord is accused falsely at work and consequently suspended, and they come and share with you that this is what my workmates have done, this is what my boss has done, maybe he was asking for sexual favors and I refused, and consequently was in a war path, and this is what he has now done, and consequently I'm on suspension, in danger of losing my job. I know exactly how you feel. You will hate this evil. You will feel disgusted by it. You will want to get into action in order to rescue this individual whom you love because evil is being done towards him or towards her. You want to get into action. Now that's one way. But Paul is going beyond evil that is done to us. He's also speaking here about evil that the people we love are doing. Evil that the people we love are doing. In other words, here you go, you come into the room of your brother or sister, and then you find them watching pornography. You love them. Don't sort of just go, well, these people with what they watch. No. You realize this thing is destroying them. Something in you erupts. You get into action. You abhor what is evil. The fact that you love this person doesn't mean you overlook what is happening unless it is being done to them. Sin is sin. It will destroy them. So it doesn't matter what it is. Suddenly, somebody whom you relate to, maybe it's husband or wife, comes home and you open their briefcase and it's full of US dollars from bottom to top, the entire briefcase. You don't just say, mwachi pangalelo. No. You obviously need to ask questions. Because there must be an answer. Is my husband, is my wife, is my whoever it is getting involved in money laundering? So some moral energy begins to precipitate against this. Because you know it is destructive. You visit a brother or a sister. They are single. And you sort of want to lie on the bed. You pull the pillow so that you can put against your head and you find a condom. You don't just say, brother, ma. No! Your system gets into action. Something is happening here. It's destroying this person. You are outraged by your discovery. You get into action because love knows that this thing is going to destroy my brother or my sister. And consequently, I must do something about it. Abhor what is evil. Be disgusted enough to be moved into action. That's what love is. That's what love is. But the third category is evil that is in us. Evil that is in us. So the first was evil being done to somebody you love. The second is evil that someone you love is doing. But the third is the evil that is lurking in my mind and in my own heart. We learned this morning where the Lord Jesus Christ was speaking in terms of not just physical adultery, but lust. What do you do? It's developing in there. Greed, what do you do? It's developing in there. Malicious thoughts towards others. What do I do? It's lacking in there. Again, the point is that where there is true godliness, there must be the outrage. My mind is not supposed to be a devil's workshop. So why is this kind of thinking constantly coming into my own mind? And it moves you into action to fight against this evil. You are repulsed by it. You are outraged by what's taking place in your mind. Abhor what is evil. Abhor what's evil. You don't entertain it because nobody can see it. No. You know it is destructive. Even to me, it is. And therefore, I need to deal with it. Sadly, we are often biased. When it is evil done to somebody we love, that's when energy erupts and we get into action. But when it is evil we ourselves are doing, or evil that our beloved is doing, we give it a different term. So when it's other people, for instance, we call it pride, isn't it? It's very proud. It's very proud. Then when it's us, I'm very self-assertive. We give it a different name. And consequently, we entertain it. But it's the same puff adder that is destroying my brother, that's also destroying me. And I ought to deal with it. I ought to abhor evil, even if it's inside me. Now, brethren, sadly, the relationship between this verse and love is genuine is one that we easily fail to see. Because our definition of love today, in its popular form, is mere sentimentality. That's all it is. To us, our thinking of love is amounts to simply, you know, making everybody feel at home and everybody feel nice. That's love. So you can be sitting in the same pew and two young people are sitting next to you and all are going, and they're showing each other cell phone, look, and you just. No. Something is happening which is wrong and it's on your pew. Why try to be nice? Why? If you can grab the phone, do so. Yes, the people realize, oh, we are being noticed. Are they in front of you? Tap them on the shoulders and do. They realize this is wrong. Afterwards, talk to them outside. Come on, grow up. This is not a playground. This is a church. Stop it. They begin to realize that love is not just sentimentality. What is wrong must be abhorred. It's the kind of ongoing struggle between parents and grandparents over children. I often meet parents who say, no, I've stopped taking my children to my grandparents, to their grandparents. They get spoiled. And it's true. Because the kids go to grandparents and start demanding, you know, chocolate and ice cream and everything else before dinner. And the grandparents, it's dinner time. The kids have no appetite now to eat. The parents are saying, but what happened? Come on, leave them. They are children. I gave them ice cream. But mom, they ought to eat their food. And then the mother says, but even you used to cry for ice creams when you were young. Yes, I used to cry for ice cream, but what did you do? Were you giving me the ice cream? No. You used to refuse, mom. So pass it on to your grandchildren. So the grandparents simply want to enjoy their grandchildren. Just enjoy, you know? Enjoy. So even if they are muddy and they come with mud and they start jumping onto their suit, you know, these grandchildren. But when it's a father and they are coming, they say, hey, stop it. Now, come, go and. Even the child knows, oh, fit fear beep. There's abhorrence here. Can't touch my suit like that. To the bathroom. And you come back for inspection. That's abhorrence. So that's the kind of situation, unfortunately, we live in. Where we must be nice to everybody. You're a student. Your roommate is doing wrong things on the other side. And you're supposed to sort of just look the other way. Cavity. It's not me. You know your friend is in drugs. You look the other way. You need to be nice to them. You need to be nice to them. You know your friend is pregnant. They're trying to abort again. It's not me. I'm not the one doing it. So we live in a culture where love means being nice. Being nice. You can know that this church member is involved in an adulterous affair. You know. But please, you even tell your friend, you know this is what I'm saying, but don't mention me. Don't mention me. Because I'm supposed to remain nice. That's our understanding of love. Nice. There mustn't be that abhorrence. This is wrong. Stop it or else. It's wrong. I'm disgusted by the kind of life that you have chosen and you're now living. I'm disgusted by it. And if you don't stop it, I'm reporting the matter. Sadly, we don't do that. I mentioned before the situation I once had. I was, before I became a pastor, of staying in flats and seeing across a sister in the Lord who entertained a married man for the night. And I went there and said, look, this is what I saw. And the lady said to me, you report that to anybody and I'll pour boiling cooking oil on you. And I went, stood by the door, and I said, turn on your stove, you need it. But the worst was this. I then went to her church leaders, and I said, this is what I saw. I'm willing to testify if she refuses. The two church leaders looked at each other and said, we can't. We can't bring it to her. If we do, she will leave the church. She will leave the church. And that's how the matter died. Because they need to be nice. Nice. She's the church secretary. It's nice. Don't touch her. She might leave. Brethren, what Paul is asking about here goes against the grain in our culture, where we have been panel beaten to be nice, even when you can see evil right there in front of you. God uses you as his eyes. He allows situations to happen. He's seated on the throne of the universe. Consequently, it is no accident when you see what you see, when you hear what you hear, and it is evil that has come to your attention. That love ought to be a moral energy that begins to reverberate within you and cause you to go into action. Abhor what is evil, the Apostle Paul is saying here. Jesus was the most loving person on earth. He was. 2,000 years later, he still holds the title, unbeaten. But we saw this morning what he did with the hypocrites. He was outraged by the kind of hypocrisy, being God, that he could see. He was repulsed by it. And consequently, he gave the wars and wars and wars. At one time, he entered the temple and found it turned into a marketplace. The main issue there was no longer the worship of God, but the making of money. holiness and godliness and worship were secondary. It was now big business. And he made a whip and cleared up the place. He was outraged. "You've turned my father's house into a den of thieves," he said. "A den of thieves." He only multiplied enemies against himself. But that's what Paul is saying here. Abhor what is evil. But you know, a policeman asks for a bribe. We just give it. And we even joke about it afterwards. That's our lives. Corruption is just part of life. There's no sense of outrage. Sometimes the guy even knows you're a church pastor. And he says, yeah. Pelako shamtulo. What that means is, you know, give me some of the offering that you get at church. And we smile, we laugh. And consequently, we've reached levels now where it's embarrassing to be called a pastor in public, because you know what so many pastors are doing. And the church members know what their pastors are doing, and they are living with it. The pastors are not being fired. No. We ought to abhor what is evil. And it doesn't matter in whom that evil is. Whether it's in the enemies, whether it's in someone you love, whether it's in yourself, we ought to abhor what is evil. There ought to be a moral energy in the church, a moral energy in the church that drives the engine of ministry. Because our God is a moral being. And consequently, we ought to be moral beings too. Next time, we'll obviously be looking at the positive side. But brethren, the Christian faith has lost its cutting edge because as believers, we've become too soft. Too soft. We can be in offices where people are talking about adultery that they had yesterday and what they did, which is, as we call them, unprintables. And you are supposed to be just working. No. No. It's evil. It's wicked. You ought to make it a point there that this is disgusting to me. You ought to. That's who you are. Just as that's what they are. And that's what causes the world to realize that Christians are different. They don't just go to church. They hate sin. They really do. I worked in the mines. And the language there, to show you that you're a man, was often quite dirty. And I've never forgotten when I went for my first review with the managers, and at the end of it all, I said to them, "There's one thing I hate here. It's the language you people speak." And they burst out laughing and said, young man, you're gonna get used." And I remember saying to them, in fact, that's what my chief concern is. I'm getting used. I ought not to. And one day, manager mining was passing through the corridor, and two guys were speaking in the corridor using bad language. And as he passed through by my door, he peeped and he said to them, "Guys, quiet. There's a holy man inside there." Now, he wasn't saying it to really make them quiet. It was to laugh at me. But hey, brethren, the world needs to know. Evil is repugnant. Wicked. wickedness is repugnant. It stinks. You know that. Well, say it. Do something about it. That's what he's saying here. Let it move you into action, because love is moral. It is moral. It's not mere sentimentality. And sadly, with young people, there's this excuse when they are hanging out with the wrong crowd that I don't do what they do, I just play with them. No. If you were genuinely holy, they would kick you out of the club. They would. Because they would be very uncomfortable with your presence. Because they know they cannot just begin speaking evil and wickedness and do evil and wickedness and you are there. You will deal with it. That's the way it ought to be, brethren. There's something wrong with you. If you walk into a room, non-believers are talking wickedness and evil, and they don't suddenly stop it. The problem is not with them, it's with you. You haven't shown them that to you it's disgusting. You haven't. You haven't. You haven't. Where there's true godliness and this kind of love, and people are still hanging on to their sin, you will see dust there. It's a matter of time. Dust will go up. Because somebody is not willing to become an accomplice to that which is wicked. It's not. You will see dust there. And that's what Paul is asking of us, brethren. This is biblical Christianity. That's what it is. This is biblical Christianity. This is what will bring back the cutting edge of the Christian faith. When the world realizes that a light has been switched on among us, therefore, we cannot live as though we are in darkness. There is a lampstand among us now. It's what will cause them to want to finally listen. So, if it's not happening where you are, there are two possibilities. Either your Christianity is only skin deep. You are not really saved. God hasn't given you that new nature that is repulsed by sin. That's one possibility. And I always prefer that we begin with the worst possible situation. Here's the second, that you are backslidden. Yes, that you've backslidden on the inside. And consequently, now you are at ease with what is sinful. In both of those cases, the solution is the same, Christ. It's to go before the Lord and say to him, as I used to in my working days, well, I still work, but in the mines, that, Lord, it bothers me that I'm now hearing these insults, and that thing I used to feel inside me is slowly diminishing. Lord, please, please, sanctify my mind, sanctify my heart, give me back that sensitivity that I once had, so that there is an abhorrence that I feel when wickedness is coming in my direction. Abhor what is evil. Or to borrow the words that we'll be singing in our closing hymn, take away the love of sinning. Alpha and omega be. End of faith. As its beginning, set our hearts at liberty. Liberate me, O Lord. Liberate me so that I'm free from sin and from the love of sin, so that I abhor it. I'm repulsed by it. It stinks before me, and I want to do something about it. Let's make sure that Christ produces that in our hearts and in our lives. We must abhor what is evil. Amen.